Hello everyone, my name is Abua, and in this speech I will explain to you why we in the free software movement demand the source code, the access to the source code. And specifically I'm talking about Richard Stallman's free software movement. There are some internal divisions and other spin-off movements and other similar ideas out there in the world. There are lots of different kinds of ideas that are quite similar out there. I'm specifically talking about Richard Stallman's free software movement. So, why do we demand the source code? Why is giving others, that is the people who use software, for you as a developer of software, why is the giving of source code to them a requirement? In this speech, I seek to give you a thorough explanation of the basic fundamental arguments of the free software movement, the ethical concepts and the technical ones. So let's begin. First, we need to define freedom. Freedom means the ability for a person to control the things in their life and their life in general that has to do with all the things that are specifically tied to this person. So this includes the likes of controlling one's own property and their physical person, and has the right to enter any contract, of course, so long as other parties consent. But the specific key important thing here is that this definition of freedom does not mean a unilateral right to do anything that a person wants, in that since other people exist who also have the right to control their property, a different person does not have the right to control another person's property, right? Because there's this idea that each person has their own property and they control their own property. They have the right to their own thing, but not to other people's things. So therefore, a unilateral right to do anything, if we define freedom as such, would mean that a person would have the right to go doing anything with anyone's property. One could just run around the street and punch others in the face and steal their things because, well, I wanted to do that and I'm free to do what I want because I believe in freedom. That would be the unilateral right to do anything. But that's not the definition of freedom we use. We have the definition of freedom where a person has the right to control things in their life. So that's the definition of the freedom. It's basically the control over one's own life and things in the life that don't have to do with things that are other people's things. So then the next thing is that we believe in the free software movement in the people's right to control their computers. This means that at a fundamental point there is a right, an inalienable right, for a person who owns a computer to control that computer. That the sole person in control of that computer is the person who owns that computer. There is no other entity in the world who has a right to say on how that computer should be used as far as the context of the computing goes. Now I suppose I'm immediately going to counter this in a way where I'm going to say that, well, depending on the person, of course, in the free software movement there's going to be a lot of people, different people might have different priorities and such, so they might have exceptions for that, for things like, oh, the state has the right to make laws about like what can and cannot be done on the computer and such things. So of course people can have such exceptions, and the arbitrary beliefs any random person has is of course their business. But within the context of the software space and all the all things computing, if we ignore things like the state making a law about what can and cannot be done on a computer, we are ignoring that stuff. So that's out of scope for what I'm talking about. So those are like the kinds of things that exist outside of this context. So I'm just specifying that within this context, in this space that I'm defining, we are ignoring any state and their laws regarding what is allowed to be done on a computer. We are specifically focusing on the context of the typical relations between people who make software and people who use software. So, let's continue. An inalienable right. In this context, it means that a person has the right to control their computer, and it is not something that can be taken away. An inalienable right means something that a right that cannot be sold or transferred or invalidated in some contract. And that is specifically important, in that fundamentally an inalienable right is set as a higher priority above things like arbitrary terms in some arbitrary contract. So there might be a right to make a contract for a person, but the specific terms that can be allowed, acceptable terms in a contract, are a lesser priority than the inalienable right. So those are the basic things we in the free software movement believe in to start with, that there is this idea that people have an inalienable right to control their computers. So basically we make the argument that just like other rights, and specifically other inalienable rights that a person who supports the free software movement may or may not have in their belief system, free software is basically a relevant thing in people's lives, and people ought to have rights with it. So basically that's the argument we in the free software movement make at the very core of the issue here, at the very core of this topic of discussion, is the idea that people deserve an inalienable right to a freedom to control their computers. So that is the fundamental moral and ethical core argument. And then we will explore how this manifests in the life and human relations and all that stuff, how the ethics of this are applied to the society. So next, let's talk about a technical point. Any intellectually honest person who knows anything about computers, well, I say anything, but I mean enough about computers, will have to acknowledge that to meaningfully control software on a computer, and we are including in the definition to control the software on a computer, to include the ability to modify the software to one's liking, to have this control over the software, it requires access to the source code. That is a technical point that a person who understands computers, who is intellectually honest, does not seek to lie or to deceive other people, that person must acknowledge that this is true, that there is a need to meaningfully control the software. And of course, to meaningfully control is also irrelevant thing that needs to be specified and explained. Because one could say that, oh well, you have the right to control it, you have the right to modify the software, you just don't get the source code, you're gonna have to reverse engineer that thing yourself, you have the right to do that, I'm just not gonna help you. One could make that argument. But the way we counter that is by saying that specifically meaningfully control it. We don't just want to have some arbitrary abstract right to control the software, we specifically want to have a tangible, practical means to control the software without an unreasonable requirement to have to first reverse engineer the software for years. If it's a decent, sizable program, it will take years and years of effort for talented, skilled people. Lots of effort, time and energy spent on first reverse engineering the project, only to then be able to start modifying it properly. This would be an unreasonable thing to ask for, because what we want to do is we just want to have the right to basically control the software without all of this extra unnecessary nonsense. So we in the free software movement make the argument that it is a social responsibility to respect this ability to control the software in an actual, usable, functional way, and not this abstract concept of, oh, well, you have the right to control the software, you just don't get the source code. The reason that's not good enough is because you're basically saying that, like, you have to first invest all of this time and energy into first reverse engineering the software, only to then start controlling it. So that is an unreasonable request. So therefore, to meaningfully exercise control over the software, when to control the software includes the ability to modify the software to one's liking, it requires the source code. And basically, I make the argument that, again, a person who understands computers, who is intellectually honest, ought to acknowledge that there is the need to have the source code. Without the source code, there is basically, even if the right to modify the software, there exists this unreasonable requirement to have to first invest all of this time and energy to reverse engineering the thing, and that's unreasonable. So therefore, it cannot be a meaningful way to control the software if it has this unreasonable requirement that is required. So that's why access to the source code is basically a demand, that there has to be access to the source code that is given by the developer to the users of the software. So that's the technical point. So with that technical point and the earlier freedom that has been established in this speech that we in the free software movement believe in, those two go together in such a way where when we in the free software movement say that we believe in the people's freedom to control their computing, this control in people's computing involves or includes this technical point that I made there just now, to have the control over the computer and the software on it. And this control over the software on the computer, we've already specified that it includes the ability to modify the software to the person's liking. Therefore, that is why we ask for the source code. On the very most fundamental level, explained in the most thorough way I can think of right now, that explains why we demand the source code. But there's still more. So the third thing. If you were to make the argument that, oh, well, if you want to retain your freedom, you could just as well not use proprietary software, right? And of course, with this speech, we are assuming you're already familiar with the terminology of what is free open software and what is proprietary software. So I'm not going to explain those dynamics here on how those are defined, those words and what they mean. So you are expected to already know that stuff. So go listen to other speeches for the definitions of free open software and proprietary software. Now, there is two ways to interpret what I just said there. One of them is to just interpret it as a technical point that, oh, well, using proprietary software is a trap. If you don't want to lose your freedom, you should be avoiding proprietary software. And that would indeed be correct, and I agree with that, that proprietary software is a thing that wants to steal your freedom, and if you want to keep your freedom, you should use proprietary software. But the other meaning for that phrase, which is the one I intend to convey in the hypothetical context I would have someone else say that in, is to rephrase it as saying that, well, it's not really wrong to make proprietary software because people are not forced to use it. Like, you don't have to use proprietary software. You are not forced into a contract to use it. You can avoid it. So it can't really be wrong for a developer of proprietary software to just offer the proprietary software to people. If he forced it to people, that might be wrong, but if he merely offers it to the people, if those people want to keep their freedom, they don't have to come use it, so there can't be anything wrong with it, right? Those people choose to use proprietary software, so they've chosen to give away their freedom and all that stuff, right? So that's the argument then, reformatted as such, so we will go with that from now on. The reason I would disagree with that argument, and we in the free software movement make the argument that that is wrong and that does not hold, the reason for that is simple. I will explain it by first saying that if some people don't understand it, let it be known now that the free software movement is about a certain social justice, in the sense that proprietary software is an unjust social system, where there are all kinds of social systems out there in the world. So if you acknowledge the concept that there exists all kinds of social systems, so these are all kinds of human relations and such things, so whether you see them as just or unjust, those sorts of social systems exist, such as employer-employee relations, or a family could be one, perhaps marriage, maybe, yes, both of those, and, well, I'm not gonna think of examples, but social systems where there are relations between people, there are roles and responsibilities and rules, basically, that dictate the kinds of behavior that are allowed in a certain social system, and contracts too are social systems. And then we make the argument that there is a social system in the use of software, specifically in proprietary software, and the way that works. There are those who make proprietary software, there are those who use it, and the people who make it, they set rules for those users to follow. This is a social system. And we in the free software movement make the argument that this is unjust. And the reason it is unjust is specifically because we are tying this back to the basic fundamental argument at the core of this idea that I already established at the beginning of this speech, that we believe in the inalienable right for the people to control their computers. And the key word here is inalienable. What this means is that I already said it earlier that it cannot be invalidated by a contract, because an inalienable right sits above a contract in the list of priorities, or the order of priorities, whatever you call it, if there is a list of things in the order of how important they are. The arbitrary terms in a contract are a lower priority than an inalienable right. So therefore, basically, the argument is that you, as a proprietary software developer, in demanding that people surrender their freedom, their inalienable right to control their computing, and this would inevitably be lost, as you must be aware already by now that we've already established the requirement for the source code and the rights to use it and all that stuff. So proprietary software that does not give people the right to the source code and the rights to modify it and all that stuff. And in this speech I'm specifically focusing on the requirement for the source code. There are also requirements to the free software movement about distributing the software, but that's not what I'm focusing on in this speech. I'm focusing on the part where we demand the source code. You are, in fact, demanding others surrender their inalienable right. And we've established it already earlier in this speech that an inalienable right takes precedent. It is higher priority than arbitrary terms in some contract. It cannot be sold or transferred away or invalidated by a contract. So we then make the argument that a proprietary software end-user license agreement is basically invalid. It is morally and ethically wrong. It is evil. What you are doing as a proprietary software developer, if you give it to people or sell it or whatever, it is evil, because what you are doing is you are making the argument that you have the right to take away other people's inalienable right to control their computing, to have freedom in their computing. Basically, that's an area of life. So to have freedom in that area of life. So you would make the argument that whatever justification you have for making your software proprietary software is more important than those people's freedom to control their computing. And however arbitrary it may be, we in the free software movement disagree. We do, in fact, place the people's freedom to control their computing as a higher priority. In fact, we call it an inalienable right. And we don't just call it that, we believe it is that. Because fundamentally, what you are doing is you are creating an unjust social system. You are putting yourself in that position where you are in this position of authority, where you have this power over other people. You have this position where you dictate rules for others to follow. You set terms for them, terms in a contract that they have to follow. You have to do this, you have to do that, you cannot do this, you cannot do that. So you are in a position of power and authority, and the users of the software are in this other role. They are in this position where they are subjects. They have to be submissive to your rule, basically. This is a social system that you are creating. And you don't have the right to create that social system. That's the point. That's why the mere creation of proprietary software is wrong. So it's not enough to just avoid proprietary software and then the world is all good, as far as the people who want to keep their freedom avoiding proprietary software goes. It's not good enough. The reason we take it further and we say that creating proprietary software is evil, it is specifically because you are creating this social system. What right is it of yours to create such a social system? That's the argument here. It is not within your right to establish such a social system. But make no mistake, it is not necessarily inherently just the concept of having some requirements or other such things that you might have to follow, because after all, there are free software licenses that do have requirements and restrictions and such things. So it's not the concept of having restrictions, it's specifically also what they are about. In the context of something like the copyleft licenses, they do in fact have restrictions on what you are allowed to do with that and what you are not allowed to do with that. But if you remember from earlier at the beginning of this speech, I did not define freedom as the unilateral right to do whatever you want. So as far as the free software movement is concerned, requirements about giving other people the source code and such things, they are about respecting those other people's right to that source code and such things. They are not really about your life in the sense that the license does not meaningfully control your life. So, in fact, in the proprietary software social system, there are clear rules about your life and your use of the computer, how you are allowed to use the computer in your life, that software and things that the license covers. There are restrictions about your use of the software. But in the free software licenses, while there is the concept of restrictions in your life, they are such kinds of restrictions that they don't meaningfully, like, they don't actually stop you from using the software for your purposes. There might be some requirements about, oh, you need to include this disclaimer about this warranty notice in the source code. Some licenses have this warranty you need to have in the source code file and such things. But those things, they don't really function as obstacles in your way to use that software for your purposes. So it is not the concept of placing restrictions that's the problem inherently. It's about the kinds of restrictions and also who is placing them and to who has to follow them. So basically, proprietary software is an unsocial system because there's this person in this position of authority where they can dictate any arbitrary rule for your use of your computer. Whereas if you're using a free software license, even if it may have some tiny requirements, they are such minuscule things that they are basically, they are not effective enough as obstacles for you in your use of the software. They don't really stop you from using the software. Not really. So those things are tolerated just fine. And also the other people's right to the source code. So having the requirement to give the source code to others, well, that's not even about your life. That's about those other people's lives. So copyleft licenses, they don't really take freedoms away from you. They more so just guarantee other people have freedoms also. After all, the four freedoms of the free software movement, so long as you have them, freedom that we want, those are the things you need to have. So any requirements and such things in the licenses that may or may not exist, those requirements, if they don't contradict those four freedoms, then it's not really a restriction on those four freedoms, right? So then they are tolerable. Restrictions that do contradict the four freedoms, well, those are the kinds of restrictions we don't want. So basically, it's not inherently the concept of having restrictions that's the problem. It's about, do the restrictions contradict the four freedoms? The four essential freedoms, that's what this is about. So that's the important thing. One useful application for this speech is also that if you are ever in a situation where you are, let's say, debating the free software movement with some other people who disagree with some aspects of it or entirely it and all kinds of stuff like that, and then they make arguments about these technical points, but they try to invalidate the technical logical system of the free software movement, but the real disagreement is actually just with the values, you can point them to this speech where I explain basically what's what in the free software movement, at the very least, as far as it goes, as far as it comes to this specific core issue and specifically the requirement for source code. So imagine some people like in the BSD world, for instance, where they talk about the permissive licenses, and sometimes they make the argument that like the permissive licenses are more free than like the copyleft licenses, that the copyleft licenses are like restrictive and they don't respect freedom. Well, this is a disagreement with the values. This is not a disagreement with the technical logical system that the free software movement uses. This is a disagreement with the values, the morals and ethics, what the person believes in. Do people have an inalienable right to control their computing? Do people deserve control over their computing? These are arbitrary values that don't have a logical justification because it is arbitrarily defined. So if you, let's for example use the typical generic example. Let's say we define murder to be morally wrong. There's no logical system that proves that. We've arbitrarily defined murder is wrong, just as is, right? So in that sense, what I'm using this as an example to illustrate the point that the logical system is intact. That if you disagree with the logical system, then you have to point out where the logic doesn't work, where there's a contradiction, where there's something that doesn't work. After all, logic is about does the premise agree with the conclusion, and we've set the definitions for the freedoms and such, and we've set the moral goods and such things, and then we have a logical system. If you think there is a fault in the logic, you need to point out where the contradiction exists, basically. But if you disagree with the values, that's a different disagreement. If you disagree with the value that you don't think people do deserve freedom over their computers, that is not a logical disagreement with the logical system. That is just a question of values, the morals and ethics. Basically, it's comparable to saying that, well, you don't believe that murder is wrong. And you not believing that murder is wrong does not invalidate someone else's logical system, where if they assume that murder is wrong, that logical system is intact and makes sense, but you just don't believe that murder is wrong, so therefore that logical system fails from the beginning because it fails at that fundamental assumption. But it's not really a failure of that logical system, because in that logical system, murder is by definition wrong. You just don't agree with that moral value. So yeah, right, so there's a distinction between, so I'm just using this in a rather awkward way to explain that there is this distinction between the values and the logical system, the two are different things. Sometimes people get this mixed up and I don't understand why. It's not a difficult concept. There is a distinction between values and the logical system that uses those values. So, the free software movement's logical system is intact. It is whole and it is perfect. If you generally like to support all things freedom and you believe in freedoms as being like this important thing, I would encourage you to subscribe to the free software movement. Adopt the belief that people deserve an inalienable right to control their computing. Let no one else disturb your computer, no evil big tech company or some other entity. It should be just you who controls your computers, yeah. That's good stuff. It's a good thing. I support that. I encourage it. I recommend it. People ought to have freedom in their control of their computers. I encourage it. I recommend it. Yes, join the free software movement. With that, that's the end of this bit. Thanks for listening. Until next time. Bye.